Okay, now we're almost done. Mangalacharana, verse number 8. So here's verse number 8. And as you hear verse number 8, see if you can find the other elements of what a Mangalacharana must include. Because he's already given the adhikari, the qualification of the reader. Now he's going to restate, he's already stated some of this, but he's going to restate the other ones. Sambandha, Vishaya, and Prayojana. Those are the other three. Lord Krishna's abstract feature of pure spiritual essence often goes by the name Brahman in the text of the Vedas. His partial expansion as the Lord of creation regulates the material nature, Maya, and exerts his control through further personal expansions. That's Paramatma, by the way. Brahman Paramatma. A single manifestation of his personality, called Narayana, rules sovereign in the transcendental sky beyond this universe. May that same Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's the object, by the way, Vishaya, be pleased to grant pure love for himself, that's Prayojana, by the way, to those who worship his lotus feet in this world, that's the method to get there, by the way. So, this verse is summarizing the essence of the entire Sandarbhas. Bhagavat Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha, Bhakti Sandarbha, and Preeti Sandarbha. The next five coming up, Sandarbhas. So, may that same Sri Krishna, this is a benediction, Ashirvad, to the reader. Now here's the Sanskrit for the verse, and I've highlighted in, you know, bold colors, the last line, sa, that, Sri Krishna, swayam, Bhagavan. Notice that's, you know, the object of the book is he wants to glorify Krishna, just as the invocation said he wanted to do. So here's that term again, what a Mangalacharana must include, Anu Bandha Chatushtaya. The Chatur, this indicates four. Chatushtaya, four elements. For sake of reminder, here's Sarva Samvadini, his definition of what that is. At the beginning of a book, text number 8, at the beginning of a book, at its beginning, a book must describe these four items, the qualification of the person who may read the book. We did that one, Adhikari. The connection between the book, his Sandarbhas, and the subject, Krishna. The subject itself, Krishna, and what the reader will gain by reading the book and following the path it prescribes, Prayojana. So now, remember this line, Sa Sri Krishna Swayam Bhagavan. Sa Sri Krishna and Swayam Iha Bhagavan, or that same Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, indicates Krishna, as he is portrayed in Srimad Bhagavatam, is the Vishaya of the Sandarbhas. So there's the book and the subject of the book. Got it? Sambandha. The book and the words within the book, or the subject of the words in the book. Krishna is the subject. being spoken about, and there's a relationship. And the absolute truth in all of its aspects, personal, impersonal, complete and partial. Then, prema, this goal. There's the word prema. That's the goal. Identifies the final goal achieved by bhakti yoga, namely, transcendental love for Krishna, in which a devotee enjoys his own personal relationship with the Lord forever. Then, the final phrase here, tat pada bhajam, for those who worship his lotus feet, describes the essence of the recommended means for realizing Sri Krishna, that is bhakti yoga, devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting. Now, in his Sarvasambhadani, Jiva Goswami gets a little technical. Vacha, vachaka, sambandha. There's a relationship between, in Sanskrit linguistics, words and the meaning of the words. Vacha, the words, vachaka, sambandha. The relationship between the words and the meaning of the words. That's a Sanskrit linguistic technical term. Jiva Goswami points to it that similarly a book has an integral relationship with its subject. Trying to remember where this took place.
Oh, I remember. On my flight from Chicago, she's writing a book. And her book, now there's the book and this and the subject, and the reason for making this reference. The book and the subject of the book. So the topic she wants to write about is racial relations. But she decided the way that she wanted to write about racial relations, rather than whining and complaining about how it's awful, to portray wholesome and healthy, this is what it should look like. She didn't even get into the characters. You know, in mind. It's a Sanskrit rule for linguistics. He's very conscientious about what he's doing. So now here's that line again. Sa Shri Krishna Viditam Swayam Iha Bhagavan Prema Tat Pada Bhajam. Through the phrase Sa Shri Krishna, which indicates the original feature of Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, that's the subject of the Sandarbhas, and the Vacha Vachaka Sambandha is the relationship between his book and Krishna. Okay? Now he goes into these three features, the Brahman feature, dazzling effulgence without form qualities or opulences, you know, that thing that the Mayavadis like to say, that's the absolute truth. That's a feature. And that's a feature of Krishna. Then another feature of Krishna is these three Purusha avatars. In his commentary, he writes, they are Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha, respectively. That's Shiradakshay Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu. And through them, Krishna controls the material nature. That's Paramatma Sandarbha, by the way. And beyond the material creation, so he speaks of Narayana and makes a distinction in Krishna Sandarbha about Narayana and Krishna. Interesting. Especially for those with a Sri Vaishnava background, might be interested to see how he treats that subject. Beyond the material creation is the spiritual sky, Parvyom, which contains the various spiritual planets named Vaikunthas. The chief deity in the spiritual sky is Lord Narayana, who is a vilas expansion of Lord Sri Krishna. Now, he doesn't get into it in detail in this Mangalacharna verse 8. He does get into it in detail in Bhagavata Sandarbha and Krishna Sandarbha. especially Krishna Sandarbha. So what is that absolute truth? It's Krishna. So here's the text, and this is our last slide. Lord Krishna, in his two-handed form of Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead. This Swayam Rupa is described in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Who's the author? Rupa Goswami, Laghu Bhagavatamrita. So he's in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. It's kind of like one of the six Sandarbhas. It's Krishna Sandarbha. It's not all six. But he's giving this definition of Swayam Bhagavan. What does it mean? Ete Changsa Kala Pungsang Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. What's the significance of this? Here it is. That form of the Supreme Lord which is not a dependent expansion of some other form is called Swayam Rupa, a self-sufficient form. The Lord Swayam Rupa is grounded in itself and is the basis of all other forms. It is completely independent, second to no other forms. So that's what the Mangalacharna is disclosing as the object. He wants to reveal Krishna, because that's what the Bhagavatam does, is reveals Krishna. It's the object of the Bhagavatam, which is the object of the Sandarbhas. He wants to disclose Krishna, and he does very wonderfully. So that's the end of Mangalacharna, of Tattva Sandarbha. We'll take some time for some discussion. You can turn the lights back on if somebody knows how to do that. And get the microphone. Portable microphone. It's been fantastic preparing we're waiting for the microphone. It's been fantastic preparing. I had a fantastic time. Absorbing. I was in Vrindavan, praying every day before Radha Shyama Sundar for Rupa Goswami's mercy, and then just diving into the, hold your hand up who wants to ask a question.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Yeah.
You were describing the five characteristics of a Sandarbha, and I think the last two were, deals with complex ideas.
Yeah.
But then the next one was, it is readily understandable. So
it's a challenge, isn't it?
So how is this reconciled?
You preach at MIT. They're used to complex subjects, and how to get a complex subject readily understandable. But it's possible. That's what a Sandarbha does. A complex subject, readily understandable. It's one of the two things that it does. So you have to reduce it to something simple, although it's complex. The essence is there without necessarily all the detail. That's another one of the elements.
Guru Maharaj, I'm still not clear about the difference between the book and the subject of the book. To me, it seems like the book is the subject.
Well, that can also be said, but the book is Bhagavat Sandarbha or Sat Sandarbha, and the subject of the book is Krishna. So, in one sense, what you're saying is correct. You're not separating Krishna from the book, because Krishna, the subject of the book is Krishna. See, how can you separate Krishna, the subject, from the book? Because the subject is Krishna. But intelligence is discerning one thing from another thing. So it's one thing, it's the vacha vachaka, the words, and what the words are speaking about. The book and the words the book is speaking about. You put it all together, that's what the book is. But it's refined distinction that requires very careful intelligence, even to understand what it is, what to speak of, you know, what the two things are, that there's even two things. Something else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. I may come late, but I understand what's being said. But I can help this brother.
It takes a while. My experience is it takes a while.
Would it be fair to say, and I'll help this brother out here, would it be fair to say that the book and the subject itself is like the universe? Everything that's in the universe is intertwined.
No, it's more than the universe.
It's more than the universe.
More than the universe.
Well, did you say that many universes on top of each other?
More than many universes on top of each other.
Okay, so it's more than what it is. It's because, that it says it is.
Because the universes are within this created realm, and there's beyond the created realm, the spiritual realm, and there's the source of both of them. And that's what the subject is.
So they both...
The universe and beyond the universe and the source of both of them.
Into the spiritual universe.
Huh?
Into the spiritual universe.
Oh, yes,
the spiritual realm,
and the spirit realm. And the source of them.
And they all can intertwine with one another.
Something like that, yeah. They're all connected to the source. Not exactly they're intertwined with one another, but they're connected to the source.
Okay. Thank you.
Nice try, though. Yes.
Maharaj, in one of the slides, it was written that one should have no other desire than worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna.
That's the goal.
So I was wondering, with variety of responsibilities, how to keep this goal in the center of one's life. And
it's called bhakti, that's how. You dedicate those things to Krishna's service. Krishna's at the center. That's how. You know, the obstacle is we're attached to something else besides Krishna at the center. And so we kind of mix things up a little bit. My phrase is the two-pocket program. So much for Krishna, so much for me, so much for Krishna, so much for me, 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 Krishna, Krishna. Me, me, me. And alternatively, those things that are in this temporal realm, born of having temporary material bodies and temporary desires and temporary this and temporary that, we can connect those things to Krishna and put Krishna at the center. It can be done. One can become a pure devotee in the material world. It's not easy to become a pure devotee in the material world, but it can be done. And you know, your question was how? By bhakti. But you do for Krishna. And gradually, exclusively, for Krishna. Initially, it's not exclusively, it's the two-pocket program. We cultivate for Krishna. That's bhakti. Offer it all to Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, 1, 2, 3.
Guru Maharaj, I really appreciated the abstract you had on faithfulness to one school of philosophy.
Yeah.
And some time back, you had sent out something on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentioning one should be independently thoughtful. Would you please explain, or what are some things to watch out for, you know, when we bring those two things together, being independently thoughtful, while being very faithful?
Sure. Sure. One of the things that I was thinking to say, just repeating what Radhika Raman said when he gave a little seminar on the Sandarbhas last summer. He said exactly what you're doing. He said, and you know, the other questions as well. He said, you know, this isn't about stories. It's really easy to listen to stories. And philosophy isn't as easy to listen to. But even if you take notes and you're like, you know how to get a 4.0 or, you know, A cumulative scores in your studies at school or something like that, it's not the same because, you know, it has to do with the true self. And so the way to get the most benefit is to be, his phrase is, Radhika Raman, be engaging with the subject matter. This is the independently thoughtful. While engaging in the subject matter, don't just like nod your head and say yes and write it down so when you ask the question you can get a high school A in your exam. You can say it back. But engaging means you question it. But when you question it in this independently thoughtful manner, it's not a challenging kind, it's a try to understand it kind. So even if you come up with a doubt that says, well, wait a minute, you know Jiva Goswami's right, while being independently thoughtful. I just want to make sure, you know, that I've understood it correctly, so I ask independently thoughtful questions about the subject matter, exactly like you're doing. That's engaging with the subject. Exactly as Jiva Goswami did when he went to Benares, he learned 6 atheistic doctrines. Now, some of that which he learned, the atheistic doctrines, they're points of logic that he uses. He doesn't discard the points of logic and uses their points of logic to establish his points. And he refers to them. In other words, he's independently thoughtful in the sense that he's not at all interested in just like redoing, you know, our phrase, you know, recreating the wheel. If somebody has said something very nicely, he'll give them credit for it. But he doesn't necessarily, that's the independently thoughtful. But, you know, the conclusions of his teachers, Rupa and Sanatan, are definitely right. He doesn't question their teachings. He may use something over here or, you know, discard something over there. In fact, there's one place, I haven't read it, but again, Radhika Raman says, in one place in Paramatma Sandarbha, that actually, there could have been 7 Sandarbhas. You know, a Brahman Sandarbha. But, you know, very succinctly he says, Shankaracharya has already done a very good job with that, so we don't have to replicate it. He just moves on. So there's fidelity, not just, you know, but, you know, for intellectual, you know, precision, but spiritual principle while being independently thoughtful at the same time. It's good. When you do like that, then you'll understand the subject more deeply. And, you know, doubts that you may have had, or not even necessarily doubts, but, you know, how does this fit together with that? Arjuna does it. Independently thoughtful questions. Maharsh Pariksit does it. One point you said this, another point you said that, please clarify. So, you know, one example comes to mind is in the 5th canto Bhagavatam. One time you say that the motion of the sun is clockwise, another time you say it's counterclockwise. You contradicted yourself. I'm sure there's an explanation. Could you explain it? And he gives an explanation. Independently thoughtful. Or here's another one. In the beginning of the 6th canto, Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharsh Pariksit how to prevent people from entering into the hellish planets that you described at the end of the 5th canto. To test him, Shukadeva Goswami gives a partial answer. Very respectful to his spiritual master, Shukadeva, he presents a doubt. what you say, it's not so clear because it's a partial answer. Very good. You were listening very carefully to the first five cantos. You're right. You get an A. Then he gives another partial answer. Then he gives the complete answer. So one can be independently thoughtful with, you know, without abandoning fidelity. One can be in full fidelity while being independently thoughtful. Someone else? Yes.
Maharaj, in text 7 he's saying, I'm writing Bhagavat Sandarbha. So he's using that term for all collective 6 Sandarbhas?
Yeah. There's two terms for the 6. One of them is Sat Sandarbha, that's the conventional one. The actual term that Jiva Goswami gave was Bhagavat Sandarbha. They both mean the same thing, all 6.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's related with this is, in every Sandarbha he starts again Mangalacharan, or they are considered as one?
I'm not familiar enough to answer that. Okay. I know that in Paramatma Sandarbha he does, because I researched that verse, and it's in Paramatma Sandarbha. I don't have the answer to your question. Over on this side?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, morning, most of the time we spend our time discussing from the two verses of the Mangalacharan, establishing the position of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord.
Okay.
I'm really thinking, Maharaj, when we went through all these 9 verses, the, like you told, the prime aim of the Sandarbha is establishing the supremacy of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
So then I'm really thinking, Maharaj, maybe the purpose of those first two verses, Jiva Goswami is giving, for us to more think of following the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like, you know, accepting Sankirtan movement and holy name of Krishna, than understanding, than accept more of like discussing more into the more into establishing the position of Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord.
Well, there are a few things. The more you do one, it'll help the other. The more you do the other, it'll help the one. Because they're connected. Because Lord Chaitanya came to give love for Krishna. So you take that means by which Lord Chaitanya came to give love for Krishna, and you get closer to love for Krishna. And the more you understand Krishna, the more you love Krishna. The more you understand a person, the more you can love that person. Assuming they're lovable. And Krishna is definitely lovable. So the more you, one enhances the other. They both have the same objective, and they're meant to complement one another and assist one another, and they do. But, and, this evening we're going to hear more on the goal and the strategy to reach the goal. Right along the same lines as the question or comment you just made. Stay tuned for this evening. In front of you, yeah.
Guru Maharaj, this morning you said that each Sampradaya's Acharya wrote a commentary on Vedanta Sutra.
Baladev.
You said that each Sampradaya's Acharya...
Yes.
So
one of their contributions.
So if the Shat Sandarbha's teachings are reflective more of Ramanujacharya's teachings than Madhavacharya's teachings. I just wanted some clarification.
Because they're the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's in the line of Madhvacharya.
Yes.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in the line of Madhvacharya. But he's the Supreme Lord. So, it's not a no-no. is not an aparad or, you know, some deviation. For Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to establish teachings that are distinct, there are areas of Madhvacharya's teachings that are not identical with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. For example, Dvaitavad. And his whole thesis is resting upon the distinctions of things. Panchabheda is the terminology. There's distinction between the living entity and God, between living entities and living entities, between living entities and material nature, between material nature, between material nature and God. Panchabheda. And it was like a theme throughout. Difference. You know, it was like super challenge to Shankaracharya. Super challenge. The others didn't go far enough. He went like as far as you can go. Panchabheda. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Abheda Abheda. Which isn't exactly what Ramanujacharya taught either. He taught something else. He taught something that Ramanujacharya taught, it's getting philosophical here, Vishishta Advaita, which says, the absolute truth is absolute, and inherent within the absolute are Vishishtas, or attributes. Sometimes they're exhibited, sometimes they're not exhibited, but they're inherently absolute within the absolute truth. Different. Absolutely different. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is simultaneously one and different. But he established a different teaching. But he had the credential to do so. And without, you know, too many details, great scholars from the Madhvacharya school hearing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings on this and that, their conclusion is almost the same, without the detail. Almost the same. But there's, so, to establish that achintya bhed abhed tattva, how do you substantiate that without explaining Vedanta Sutra? Well, you need a commentary. So, Faladeva wrote the commentary. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was happy with Srimad Bhagavatam. Because that, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's what it teaches. Difference and non-difference at the same time. That was his teaching. And those teachings are more akin to Ramanujacharya and some of the details of it. Because the other is, I mean, there's other things. Here's another thing that I learned from Gopi Pranadana. I've never studied Madhvacharya's teachings. He did, because he lived in Udupi for some time. And he said, one of the teachings, he shared this with me, one of the teachings of Madhvacharya is there are certain kinds of souls and that's it. Mahaprabhu's teaching and the Bhagavatam teaching is one can move from this species and that species and this condition and become a demigod and a dog. And his teaching is, you know, a little different. There's certain categories of souls. And that's it. Like eternally, categories of souls. Something like that. So there's distinctions. And Mahaprabhu's teachings are based on the Bhagavatam. And we're going to hear, stay tuned, coming attractions, about Madhvacharya's making a gloss of some of the main messages of Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll hear why he did that. But he didn't take that as his principal evidence, whereas Mahaprabhu did. The Bhagavatam is the principal evidence. Although he didn't write commentary on it. His disciples did. But he didn't. Anyway. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Someone else?
Yes. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, in the last slide you mentioned that Krishna is the Swayam Rupa, self-sufficient form.
Yes.
So how can we understand as Lord Rama not being the self-sufficient form?
He's an expansion of Krishna.
But he has all the opulences and everything, right?
But he's an expansion of Krishna.
Okay, Maharaj. Another question I have, Maharaj, is regarding the book, the structure of the book. It says it is translated and it is commentary by Gopi Parandhan Prabhu.
Yes.
So is there, I was reading the book and I'm not seeing a demarcation where it says that, okay, this has been mentioned by Gopi Parandhan Prabhu and this is what Jiva Goswami said and Baladev Vidyabhushan said.
Right. Sometimes he does, but Jen, you know, Gopi Parandhan worked on this for maybe 12 years. And in his commentary, he didn't say, as Prabhupada didn't say sometimes, this is Jiva, I'm doing it. That Baladev said this, Jiva Goswami said that, and even I went, you know, this little section by the BBT editors, they said something else. I'm giving, you know, reference to where it came from. Gopi doesn't necessarily do that, nor did Prabhupada necessarily do that. But we can understand it's not creative writing. He's taking from these commentators. And there's other references on particular verses, for example, that's not like in Baladev's or Sarvasambhadani Jiva Goswami's. You know, other references from other places that say, you know, he's just synthesizing them and giving in a, you know, for his audience. And his audience is, you know, to some degree, certainly, you know, devotional, but not necessarily as academic as Gopi is. He, you know, he made it simple without saying this is the source and that's the source. But it's not creative writing. He's synthesizing, making it digestible for us.
And another thing, Maharaj, in the morning, one of the Prabhu asked this question and you mentioned that there can be a differences because Sridhar Swami was mentioning as Tvisha Krishnam word differently than Jiva Goswami.
Yes.
And then I'm reading in here, one of the verse where Jiva Goswami says that it says directly about Mahaprabhu, but Sridhar Swami said about Lord Rama, the same verse.
Yes, it's a little technical. I skipped over it because it's a little technical. If you want to go into the technical, we'll speak about it offline.
But how to understand it and Sri Lord...
How to understand that two acharyas can say two different things, that's your question?
Kind of, and Lord Chaitanya said that he, and it,
okay,
this book
okay,
also...
Let's not go into the technical, let's just stay with the principle. Okay? Now, you sat very patiently through the entire part one and part two of Brahma Samhita. And in text 36 of Brahma Samhita, Bhakti Siddhanta covers the same subject matter. Maybe you don't remember, but I do. I very clearly remember it because it's an important and it's a delicate point. And in short, two things. In short, it's okay that this acharya says this and another acharya says that, and it's okay because what they're saying, this or that, it's based on proper rendering of the Sanskrit terms, and they have a perspective on the subject through the medium of the terms. They're being loyal to the terms, and they have a perspective. And it's perfectly okay. Bhakti Siddhanta explains like that. The second thing he says is don't take sides. He doesn't use that language, but that's what he's saying. Don't take sides. This one's right. It's the parakiya and swakiya topic. Remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
So, some say this and some say that, and those that say this and those that say that, we don't take sides. We support Gobakta's independently thoughtful versus fidelity to the disciplic succession. Bhaktisiddhanta says, read it carefully one more time if you like, in Gopal Champu, it seems that Jiva Goswami is taking the side of Swakya, that it's not possible for Jiva Goswami to take anything other than Rupa Goswami. So we should take it. He's loyal to Rupa Goswami. That's his conviction. Whatever Rupa Goswami says. While he's presenting something over here that looks like, sounds like, seems like it's something else.
Maharaj, may I add to this? In one of the purports I read that Jiva Goswami, for the spiritual benefit of the disciples, did favor the Swakya Rasa for some time.
No. No. Parakya. He wrote like that. There's a whole explanation. And I don't want to go into it right now because it's not pertinent to this conversation. But as Bhaktisiddhanta writes, I have full conviction that Jiva Goswami could never take into position other than Rupa Goswami. Even if he got a blood transfusion. He couldn't. He's at Rupa Goswami's feet and attached Rupa Goswami's feet, and he's not going to come up with another idea. Whatever, you know, however you might look at it. That's firm. All right?
Maharaj, one more small thing. Okay. I remember a verse that says that whoever hears Mayavad philosophy, and Mahaprabhu, I'm not remembering the Bengali verse, but it says that hoile sarvanash, whoever hears the Mayavad philosophy. Now, Jiva Goswami read it for 1 year. I know he's Jiva Goswami.
Well, he didn't read Mayavad philosophy for 1 year. He, in 1 year, he studied all six of the atheistic doctrines that are called the Sat Darshans. But he heard them from a Vaishnav. You know, he was anesthetized, just like chapter 7 of Adi Lila is Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Prakashana Dasara. Is it chapter 6 or 7? 7. When that was published, Prabhupada had it printed in a paperback. He had it printed in a hardback. He wanted us to read it and become conversant in not just, you know, what do Mayavadis say, but when Mayavadis say this, we should understand that. It was sanitized and anesthetized, and you know, we were getting an inoculation. And that's how Jiva Goswami received those teachings from Madhusudana Vachaspati, who knew very well Lord Chaitanya's teachings, and he knew the other ones very well. And then he used that to help people who didn't know Lord Chaitanya's teachings very well. So he didn't get contaminated, don't worry.
Thank you, Maharaj.
He was in good hands with Madhusudana Vachaspati. One more question and we're done for today. Or for this afternoon. What time do we get back together again this evening? 7:30. Okay.
Guru Maharaj, Acharya's realized knowledge is perfectly in line with the recorded knowledge of previous Acharyas. So, when does he reveal his realizations?
When does he reveal his realization? When he writes. When he writes, he reveals his realization.
When he writes.
That's it?
I was thinking like only for when the qualified inquirer asks about...
Well, supposing someone's like a guy on the street. The Bhaktivedanta purports are there for the guy in the street.
Yes.
He's not an inquirer.
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
But Prabhupada said, why are these books so popular? Because they're, then he answers his own question. Because they're written from the platform of realization. And Prabhupada was giving his realizations in his Bhaktivedanta purports, qualified inquirer or not.
That was the question, Guru Maharaj.
Huh?
That was the question, Guru Maharaj.
Okay.
Thank you.
He is, you know, very compassionate. And, you know, as a result, some people misunderstood. And some people improperly utilized and all kinds of things. But, you know, the opportunity for that benediction was given because he was told to do so. And so he did. With full faith in the words of his Guru Maharaj, he did. Okay, we'll end there. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.